Hey, thank you for downloading the first episode of the Ecom Podcast. My name is Seb, and I've spent the past 10 years of my career working in the ecom industry. In the upcoming episodes, I'm going to speak to the people really getting stuff done in the ecom world. Today's episode is an interview with an old colleague of mine, Andrew Banks. He's the ex-head of ecom at Matalan, and he's the CEO at Ventureforge. Let's get into the interview. Hi, Andy. Thanks for coming on the Ecom Podcast. Why don't you give people a brief overview of how you got to where you are, what you're doing at the moment, and a bit about Ventureforge.
Sure, thanks, Seb. My history, I've been in and around digital for about 20 years now. First part of my career was working in marketing agencies, where I did about 12 years. And then following a bit of a career break, I took some time and worked retail side, first of all as a consultant at victoriaplum.com, then joining an investor in Leeds to launch a business called Earth Bathrooms, which ultimately became Matalan Direct as Matalan acquired the business. Following that, I then went on to join Matalan as their head of e-commerce, spent 18 months there growing their e-commerce business, and finally leaving there about 18 months ago to start Ventureforge. I think through my career, the one thing that I've really benefited from is working with small entrepreneurial brands, and that's where I found I got most of the enjoyment and actually most of my success. So then having spent time in a major retailer, what I really wanted to do was come out and start a new agency. And that's where I started Ventureforge, that is there to help the challenger brands, those that want to grow quickly and scale quickly, benefit from some of my background in smaller, agile startup businesses, but also some of that experience in working inside a big one.
Cool. So Ventureforge, what is their ethos? You know, what are the services they offer? You know, not to put you on the spot here, but if I wanted to start an e-com site, what would Ventureforge give me over someone else?
Cool. So Ventureforge's proposition is we're here to help other people build exceptional e-commerce businesses. So as lots of agencies are dev partners, they can build a great Shopify store or a great Magento store, or some are consultancies or some are marketing agencies. We pitch ourselves as an e-commerce partner. So we're here to work with you on a commercial level and help you build your business. We do that, like most other agencies, through e-commerce strategy, e-commerce design and build, which we do on the Shopify platform. We do all of the usual digital marketing services you expect to see in an agency. And we also have a full Amazon strategy and management service where we help brands grow on Amazon. But I'd say that the key to our success and where we make a difference is we're not the tech guys, we're not the marketing guys, we're not the Amazon guys. We're a commercial partner that treats your e-commerce business as if it was ours.
Any interesting clients at the moment? Who's your biggest client? Any recent successes?
Yeah, we've got a broad mix of clients. We've got clients across B2C and B2B. We've got an amazing brand, Candleshack, who have a very unusual business where they sell candle parts online, something I didn't even really knew existed until we started talking to them. And they've got a fantastic B2B business that helps small home candle makers build candles, design candles that they can then sell themselves. And we've had some amazing success with that client. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we've got brands like the Four Beauty Group in Northern Ireland, where we're helping them grow their direct-to-consumer skincare businesses across Ireland and the UK. And we've also got brands like Badder Sport, who we've just started working with. They're quite an aggressive online fashion startup brand, and we've just started working with them on their strategy in the past couple of months.
So you've mentioned a list of services. I'm guessing, based on the customer need, it's not like a one-stop shop where it's all of it or nothing. I'm guessing you would work with the client if they needed strategy, if they needed dev work. You would fill their need as and when. It doesn't have to be everything, does it?
No, absolutely not. I mean, we created that model so we could be everything. We could be the fully outsourced partner. And some of our clients take that. Some start, you know, with strategy and then go on to ask us to deliver the services to deliver the strategy. But the beauty of our model and our proposition is you can come to us for everything, or you can come to us for specific help, be that Shopify development, be that the ongoing marketing, be it some commercial support on your e-commerce strategy. For us, we don't really mind. The most important thing is that we're working in a way that gives value to the client, not in a way that we want to work as an agency.
And you mentioned Shopify there as the platform. What made you choose Shopify? Not to go into a Magento versus Shopify now, but why Shopify?
Shopify, we backed Shopify as a platform because of the experience I had at Earth Bathrooms, which then became Matalan Direct. It's the first time I've worked in e-commerce in 15 to 20 years where technology pretty much just got out of the way. It allowed you to build the business quickly. It allowed you to scale the business quickly without getting too hung up on the technology side of things. And I think at a peak of probably 42 employees in that business, the vast majority of those people weren't technical, they weren't developers. And I think for me, that showed me the power of a platform like Shopify, where you can focus on building a business, not getting hung up on the technology that's required to do that. I think then when I came to build an agency, that's kind of the ethos I wanted to take to it. I think technology is a huge part of running an e-commerce business, but it's not the reason that you're building the business. It's not the thing that you're trying to do. It's not the problem you're trying to solve. If you're trying to sell candles, fashion, laptops, whatever it may be online, the technology needs to be a facilitator. And for us, that's why we've backed Shopify. It's a great enabler to building the business, and very rarely have we found it to be a blocker that gets in the way of building the business.
So speaking of blockers, you know, if I was an existing bricks and mortar store and I came to you saying, I want to get into e-com, what do you think the kind of industry challenges are at the moment?
I think the biggest industry challenge we come across in retail and the bricks and clicks side of it is mindset. I think retail's under a huge amount of pressure at the moment. You've only got to look at some of the reports that are going around of footfall decline, and most retailers, the biggest names in retail, really starting to suffer. And a lot of the stories that you hear are that that's because of the pressure of the online guys. And I've found, especially across the last 5 years or so, and spending time around some of these brands, that the mindset that exists in a traditional business is almost the opposite of the mindset that you see in the successful online businesses. And for me, that's the growth mindset. It's people that are open to change, willing to work much more agile. And I don't mean that in the buzzword sense, but people that are willing to enter into testing and learning and rapid change and rapid iteration to find out what works for their online customer. So I'd say without a shadow of a doubt that the biggest blocker today is mindset, definitely not technology, definitely not access to resource to do this. It really is the mindset of the business.
Yeah, there's all these stories at the moment, you know, e-commerce killed the high street. I mean, personally, I agree. I don't think that is valid. I mean, you look at some of the big players like JD Sports or Next, very well-established high street brands that are doing the e-com side of it as well. I mean, if you look at Next, they pioneered, you know, 12 p.m. cutoff next day delivery. What other high street brands are there that you think that have really done well at that and kind of mastered the whole omni-channel?
Well, there's probably a couple of examples here. I think not necessarily omnichannel, but a brand that has transformed phenomenally well is the Shop Direct Group. If you look around, go back 10, 15 years, and my wife used to work in this industry of catalogues. You know, a lot of those businesses, when online shopping really kicked in, absolutely suffered. You know, they didn't adapt quick enough. But to your point about Next, what they all had, but what they all didn't realise they'd got, was the building blocks of phenomenal e-commerce businesses. They had distribution. They had logistics, they had stock, they had warehousing, all the things that you associate now with a good high-scale e-commerce business, they all had, but they didn't adapt quick enough. You look at someone like Shop Direct, who's come from being a catalogue and high street shops business to now being a pure play online business and one of the most successful ones in the country. That's a phenomenal transformation. I think in the same vein, you look at a business like Matalan, you know, a bit of business that's close to my heart from working there. They've transformed late, but when they transformed, they embraced it, and their online business now has gone from strength to strength. They do a great job of omnichannel, you know, understanding how a customer shops online, how a customer shops offline, and what the impact of one channel is on the other. They've done a great job of understanding that and really progressing from their traditional days in direct marketing to now being a really good, rapidly growing and successful online business as well.
We actually know each other from Matalan. You know, you were, I think it was COO when I first joined, and then you became CEO of Matalan Direct. I was one of the front-end devs on the team that built that, so I can echo and 100% agree with your comments about Shopify and everything that you made earlier. And I think Matalan, to me, are a really interesting one. They've not only done the website really well, which we obviously played quite a big part in, they've also really tried to get into the whole click and collect and maximize what some people would call like the showrooming model, where they just go into the store to look at something physical and then they go home and order it on Amazon. Matalan have kind of tried to get people into their own store. They don't care if you don't buy it in the store, but as long as you go home and buy it from the Matalan website, that's what they want. And I think they're really doing well at the moment.
I think that whole cross-channel piece is huge. I mean, you know, as I said earlier, you think about the challenge facing retail in terms of footfall decline. You look at the opportunities you've got in an omnichannel business to drive the click and collect footfall into your store, the opportunities that you can get by working with other delivery partners. So for example, we put DPD pickup stores into Matan stores to drive other retailers' footfall into there. Well, surprise, surprise, when people come into a shop that they buy something. So I think one of the concepts I kind of embraced when I worked in that business, and one thing that I've embraced ever since, is customers don't shop in a channel. They don't think about, I'm going to go buy from Matalan online or Foot Asylum online. They go to buy from the brand, and they don't distinguish between the stores or the online world. They just want frictionless, highly convenient service so they can touch, feel, and interact with a brand whenever they want, and pick up the products whenever and wherever they want. And it's down to the owners of those businesses, the managers of those businesses, and the leaders to create an amazing frictionless experience. I think if you embrace that, create fantastic stores, a fantastic online experience, and a low-paying journey, you're making it easier for customers to shop. And that really, for me, is what's at the heart of retail, absolute convenience and ease of shopping.
Well, I think there's an interesting parallel, because you mentioned, you know, the customer doesn't care online, in store. But then you mentioned earlier when you were talking about VentureForge that actually the key decision makers in the business, they don't care whether it's Magento, whether it's Shopify, whether it's WooCommerce running on WordPress. As long as the tech works the best for the customer and allows them to deliver what the customer wants, that's the ultimate goal, isn't it?
It is indeed. You know, putting the customer at the heart of every decision that you make and challenging the teams inside your business to solve the customer problems, not get hung up on solving the technology problems or solving problems with the technology that they want to choose. You know, if you put the customer, real data and real insight into what the customer is doing at the heart of all of your decisions, you will only improve what you're giving that customer.
Do you think actually that the bricks and mortar stores that have got the web sorted, so Matalan, JD, do you actually think that they could, in the coming years, have an advantage over the pure online stores?
I think they can in many areas. I mean, you've got some amazing online startups, online pure players now, they're not really startups. They do online retailing better than, you know, many other brands in the world. And some of the things that they've got different in their business models, you know, take the fashion market. If you look at any high street fashion retailer, they're still operating closer to a 6-month buying cycle. They operate in spring, summer, autumn, winter seasons. But you look at Boohoo, Pretty Little Thing, In The Style, they're all making regular drops. So it's not just the fact that they're selling online that has changed, it's their entire business model and their ability to disrupt fashion retail has really challenged people. But then what you get in the high street stores that you don't get in the online retailers is that experience. You get to touch and feel the product. You get to return it much easier. You've got more touch points available with the brand. So I think the well-managed brands with physical retail presence have got a huge advantage. But they've also got lots of challenges ahead. You know, you look at any of the major high street retailers, they've all got Brexit to face. Well, every brand has got Brexit to face into with currency fluctuations. They've got rigid store estates. You know, they're into 25, 30, 40-year leases on those stores. So they haven't got the agility to respond to any economic challenges that are coming. So I suppose I probably can't give you a straight answer to that one, Seb, but I think there's a couple of points. One, your experience in a store, you can't take away from that. But the agility that the online businesses have when facing into some of the challenges that are probably going to come into the next few years, it will be interesting to see how things pan out.
On that point, in the next sort of 1 to 2, maybe even 3 years, what do you think is going to be the next big thing in terms of, you know, your average industry that is selling candles, for example, that you mentioned earlier? Do you think AR or AI or any of those new tech things are actually a benefit to them, or do you think they should be focusing on other stuff?
I think they're all a benefit, but I don't think there's any next big thing. I think if I had a penny for every time a client had asked us, you know, what's the silver bullet, I'd probably be richer than I am now by running an agency and charging for services. I mean, almost certainly would be. The reality is that online retail is as challenging now as physical retail, if not more so. So I think if there is any secret sauce to growing an online business in the next big thing in the next few years, I think it's actually going back to good old-fashioned retailing principles. Getting under the skin of the customer, understanding the customer behaviour, understanding your data, and actually working in a way that answers the customer's problems. Of course, AR, AI, machine learning, personalization, whatever else is coming down the tracks will have a huge impact on that, but only if you align the delivery of it with solving a real customer problem and a strong hypothesis behind doing that. I think if you're implementing technology for technology's sake or because it feels like the next big thing, I think you're onto a losing track. Solve a customer problem and you'll grow the business.
I couldn't agree more. The behemoth that is Amazon. Do you think that there are certain businesses out there that should be worried? I was having a conversation with someone a couple of days ago and they were saying, I've got this idea for this e-com store selling this product. They went on Amazon, it was there, and they were like, oh, that's that idea out the window. Do you think once Amazon have kind of got their teeth into something, everybody should just turn away from it? Or do you think there's room there for other people beside Amazon? Because to be honest, they have, you know, their infrastructure, logistics-wise for delivery, their customer returns is kind of no questions asked, really. And, you know, they've got the app, they've got the website, they can deliver it anywhere. And they can then look at anyone on prices because they're just willing to take a loss on it.
Amazon's a really interesting business. And you know, being open, we have a service to help clients build businesses on Amazon. So I'm maybe not the most impartial person to answer this. One of the questions we often get asked from our clients is, should I embrace Amazon and sell on there? Is it an opportunity or should I stay well away from it? And is it a threat? And I don't think there's one single answer to that question. Amazon absolutely dominates. We do a huge amount of market research for our clients. And when we're looking into any market sector, we've done 5-7 strategy projects in the last 6 months. When we look at the market research, the market leader in every vertical that we've looked at is Amazon, and it's not by 1 or 2%, it's by 10 to 15% at least in every market that we've looked at. You can look at that in two ways. One, I shouldn't deal with them because they've already got mass market share, or two, it's the single biggest opportunity to get my product into the market. The advice that we give our clients is to approach it with your eyes open. You know, make sure that the decision you're making to deal with or to not deal with Amazon is commercially founded, not emotionally founded. You know, make sure if it is a clear commercial opportunity, you enter into it in the right way, on the right terms with Amazon. And if you're terrified of dealing with Amazon and you think they're a threat, just be really clear in terms of the size of the opportunity that you're walking away from or potentially deciding not to go after and how else you'll bring that opportunity into your business. We know many brands that are selling on Amazon and being very successful at it, but we've also seen some amazing stories of where Amazon now not only dominate a product category, but have actually taken over categories. I can't remember the exact stats, but in America, Amazon's own brand is now either the second or the third best-selling nappies brand, knocking Pampers and the other major brands out of the top spots. And in the batteries market, you think of brands like Duracell and Eveready, and most people think they're the market leader. I believe Amazon is either number one or number two in terms of battery sales in the US now. So they have come from nowhere in some industries, created their own white label products, and knocked some huge established brands off the top spot.
It is a captive market they've got, isn't it? And it's one of those ones where, as you say, with going with your eyes open, can you walk away from that potential audience that is there? And it's just a case-by-case basis, isn't it? I think the key decision makers in businesses need to look at all the stats and make that call and potentially maybe see that there is a risk there that if it is successful with them, Amazon may turn around and try and copy it.
There's also a risk, I said, of not doing anything, you know, turning your back on Amazon and saying you're not going to do anything. We've met brands in the last year who have said, look, we don't want to deal with Amazon. We don't need an Amazon strategy. But then what we've found is, and these are typically manufacturers or distributors of products, their products are being sold on Amazon by the people that they're selling to through wholesale or distribution. And that ends up with their products on Amazon with no control. That then means multiple sellers are in a race to the bottom on the price. And actually by not having an Amazon strategy, that whole brand proposition becomes devalued because their products are being sold there. They've been sold at rock bottom prices, and that's detrimental to their sales in every other channel. So I think we'd always argue that not having an Amazon strategy isn't really an option. It is perfectly valid for your strategy to be, we are not going to sell on Amazon, but you need to make sure you understand the implications of that and protect your brand.
That's a really good point, actually. I mean, it was only, I think it was a couple of days ago, Primark was saying they're not responsible for the people that are reselling their stuff on Amazon and eBay. You know, and just because you're not on Amazon doesn't mean they couldn't take an interest and then copy it anyway. So I think it's one of those ones where you have to actually look at all the numbers, don't you? You can't just say, oh, they're too big or I don't like them.
Well, I thought it was an amazing story last week. That story went around our office like wildfire, and people going, yes, Primark are finally online. And I can buy from them if they've done it via Amazon. And I always felt that Primark was a brand that would really struggle to go online because of their low average order value, the operational complexity of shipping cheap items with low margins. That's a challenging model. And when I saw the story, I thought, hang on a minute, is this a really smart move? That Primark want to get their products to market. They don't want the operational complexity. Have they brokered some kind of master deal with Amazon, who have been trying to make inroads into fashion but haven't been particularly successful at it? And I did wonder at the time, actually, is this a really smart move from Primark? And I do wonder if it's something that they should be exploring.
Well, it's funny you mention Amazon and fashion. I think, you know, you said earlier about not using tech just for the sake of tech. I actually think that's been Amazon's downfall. You know, they've tried to make the Echoes with the cameras, and then with the AR, you can view the stuff virtually and then you can see it on the screen. I think they've tried to overcomplicate it. You get a lot of these other companies out there where they just send you a box of clothes every month. You pick what you want, you send it back. It's kind of the more traditional try it on in a fitting room model, but in your own homes. And as you send stuff back, they figure out what you're liking, what you're keeping. They figure out, I like that cut of shirt or that jean. And then they refine what they send you more and more. Their hope being that when they send you 10 items every month, you keep all 10 and you don't send them back. And I think Amazon are already doing it. They're already simplifying. You know, they've really simplified their Echo line. They're kind of taking the whole privacy thing a lot more serious. So they're not really putting that many cameras in stuff anymore. They kind of tried the whole tech first approach, realized that customers don't really want that. And now they're coming back a little bit more traditional. So I don't think it'll be long until Amazon makes another try at fashion. Just look at what Amazon did to books.
Yes, absolutely disrupted it.
I've got multiple Kindles. I'm sure you've got a Kindle. I can't even think of the last time I bought a book. And I actually get annoyed now when I can't get a Kindle version of a book. They are taking over. But I think, as you say, I don't think retailers should be scared of it. Potentially, there's a good revenue stream there from it, I think.
One of the areas where Amazon does struggle, and where I think they will struggle for the foreseeable future, is with more emotive purchases that a customer feels connected to. So I'm a prolific Amazon customer. I ordered off Amazon every 1.3 days last year, but that's everything from cat litter to batteries to coffee pods to the house, replacement light bulbs, but it's very, very functional stuff where convenience is important. I need that product tomorrow. I need it at a price and I know it will get delivered. I can't purchase fashion in that way. I actually buy off ASOS, Zalando, because actually the salesmanship on those products is much better. The returns experience is actually better than Amazon. And I still like to go to a physical store for clothing because it's all about the touch and the feel of the product. So I think there are some markets where Amazon will struggle to cut through and where technology actually isn't the answer. You know, quite surprisingly, they hit books first, selling physical books, not selling virtual books or audiobooks. There's still something to be said for touching and feeling a real product and having an emotive connection with it rather than just a functional one.
You know, you were saying that you ordered cat litter, batteries, everything from Amazon. It is the true everything store, isn't it? It's that one-stop shop for everything versus if you were going to go on the Duracell website to get batteries, go on the Pets at Home website to get cat litter, you'd waste your evening jumping around different websites, logging in, filling your card details in multiple times. And there was some research that I read recently where it was saying that actually Amazon might not be the cheapest, but people can't be bothered to look elsewhere. They're already on Amazon buying two things. They might as well buy the four other things they want as well. And it's the same ethos that if they're there in the Matalan store, they're going to buy something else. If they're on the Amazon website, why would they go to another website to buy the stuff?
But there's also a powerful move there from Amazon, and that's their brand perception. Your point of you assume is the cheapest, you believe you're getting value. I never question a purchase that I make off Amazon. I go on, I buy the cat litter. I don't comparison shop on cat litter. I believe Amazon are the cheapest, if not probably close to it. I know it will turn up tomorrow. It doesn't matter if it's the world's best cat litter or second best cat litter. It's functional, it serves a purpose, and I know it's going to arrive, and the price is pretty much the cheapest I can get. If it's 50 pence more expensive, that's still a trip to the supermarket saved that probably costs me more in fuel and takes me 20 minutes of my time. So it's their overall proposition that works really well and that perception of value, if not true value in the pricing.
We've mentioned books. What are you reading at the moment? Like, what is interesting you at the moment that you think, you know, maybe you don't have time to read it, but you think, I want to read that book? Related to e-com, not related to e-com, business?
Yeah, it's mainly business at the moment. There's a couple that I've got on the go. I've done a fair bit of reading the past year, which is new for me. So I think one of my favourites at the moment is The Age of Agile. It's more of a management practice book, but looking at the true application of Agile to standard business practice. That's been a very, very interesting read. And for anybody who's read things like The Lean Startup, it's a really huge step on from that. Some really good thinking in there. I think the other one that I'm really enjoying at the moment is a book called Agencynomics. I don't think it's a well-known or widely read book, and it seems to be relatively new. But for me, coming back to the agency world after 5 years in retail, it's a great book to challenge me on my agency thinking and the approach I'm taking in the business and the plans I've got for it. And I think probably the most powerful book I've read though in the past probably 6 months or so is an amazing book called Traction by a guy called Gino Wickman. And that's an amazing book looking at a process for running your business, building your business, and actually getting the right level of traction and momentum behind the vision that you've got there and making sure that the rest of the team are on board with that. I think if anything, that one book has probably changed my approach the most and been the most insightful book I've read in a long time.
I will put links to all the books Andy's mentioned in the show notes. Thank you for your time, Andy. If people want to reach out to you or reach out to Venture Forge.
Yeah, absolutely. The best way to get in touch is through our website, which is just ventureforge.co.uk. Or if anybody wants to reach out directly, I'm on LinkedIn as Andrew Banks, or just send me an email straight to Andy, A-N-D-Y, at ventureforge.co.uk.
Brilliant, Andy. Thanks a lot for your time.
No problem. Nice to catch up. Speak to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the first episode. If you want to reach out to me, my email address is seb@theecompodcast.com. Please like and leave a review in your podcast app of choice, and I'll speak to you in the next episode.